Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. For 3 years, reporters at the Long Island, New York newspaper Newsday put hidden cameras and microphones on investigators and sent them out to pose as homebuyers. They wanted to see if real estate agents treated white, black, Hispanic, and Asian buyers differently. The differences were stark. Newsday's investigation showed that agents steered minorities away from mostly white neighborhoods and showed them fewer listings. Black homebuyers were most likely to be discriminated against. This hour on Point, housing discrimination in 2019, its consequences, and what to do about it. Listeners, join us. If you have bought or rented a home or tried to buy or rent, did you get the feeling you were being nudged toward one neighborhood or another because of the color of your skin? Did you think housing discrimination was a thing of the past? Are you surprised to learn it still exists or not surprised at all? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And with me from New York is Keith Herbert. He's an investigative reporter for Newsday, and he was one of the lead reporters for Newsday's project, which is called Long Island Divided. You can find a link to that project on our website, onpointradio.org. Keith Herbert, good to have you with us on the show.
Hello.
And I want to note, I believe Newsday still has its paywall down so that anyone can access this story and read it without having to pay the usual monthly rate. Is that right?
That's my understanding as well, yes.
So tell us a little bit about the method. As we mentioned, 3 years, you used what's generally considered the gold standard in testing housing discrimination, which is called paired testing. Tell us what you did and how that works.
We use the method of paired testing because, like you said, it's the gold standard, but it would allow us to examine what was going on in Long Island's housing market, mostly because Long Island, as you may know, fairly segregated place. It ranks among the top 10 most segregated places in suburban regions in the country. We have basically a dozen pockets where minorities live on Long Island, and we were curious about what, if anything, the real estate industry might have to do with this situation. So we embarked on a three-year effort. We sent out 25 testers, 86 tests were actually counted. We did over 100. We tested 93 agents, collected 5,700 listings. And what we found is that African Americans received most of the discrimination or evidence of the discrimination 49% of the times they went out and did the test compared to the white counterparts.
Almost half the time.
Exactly. Hispanics suffered 39%. And Asians, 19%.
And so by paired testing, you were having two different people go to the same real estate agent. One of them was white. One of them was a minority.
That's correct. They were similar in background in every way, same age cohort. We gave them profiles so that the information that an agent might ask about, such as income, what their earnings were, how much money they had in the bank, what their money for the down payment was, all these things were extremely similar. Most of the time, we gave the minority even more financial wherewithal.
Meaning that if you're measuring them just by their ability to pay and to buy, they should have been equals, or maybe the minority would even be in a better position to buy.
Right. So the difference that comes to the surface is the race.
Now, what I thought was quite interesting about this project is that before the civil rights era, housing discrimination was just open and blatant. Real estate agents would not serve black customers. Today, it's different. You found that it's harder to detect. It's a bit more clandestine. You described it as kind of covert and subtle. What are the subtleties that happen today that might be harder to detect?
Well, the way we kind of dealt with it in a long documentary on our website that accompanied all the reporting is behind handshakes and smiles, you're seeing remarkable difference in unequal treatment between whites and minorities. Today, it's unlikely for the door to be slammed in a minority's face if they go looking for an apartment at a real estate office in, you know, a largely white part of town. That was common, our experts told us, in the 60s and 70s. So the appearance is that minorities were getting equal treatment and professional level of service. Many of the testers we used, once we told them the results of the test, were surprised to learn that they had been treated in less than equal way because they felt that they were getting professional and you know, above average service.
But for example, the minority home buyer might be told, you need a pre-qualification letter before I can help you. The white home buyer might not be told that.
Yes, that was something that happened quite often. It was a barrier that seemed to be placed before minority testers that wasn't put in front of white testers. It's something that we weren't, frankly, expecting. It surprised us when we found out about it.
Keith Herbert of Newsday, we have a montage of some of the agents who were recorded with hidden cameras. And we should note that New York is a so-called one-party state, meaning both sides do not have to agree if it's going to be secretly taped. So you were able to do that legally. And here's camera footage, basically audio footage, in which real estate agents are steering white customers away from certain neighborhoods.
Follow school bus. See the moms that are hanging out on the corners.
But you don't want to go there. It's a mixed neighborhood. We need the United Nations.
I can't say anything, but I encourage you. I want you to go there at 10 o'clock at night. Go to that 7-Eleven. I have to say it without saying it. You know, you have the knowledge of the areas.
Yes.
I don't want to use the word steer, but I try to I'll use another word.
No, listen, absolutely.
So, Keith Herbert, we heard the word steering. It's the idea that real estate agents would steer some people towards certain neighborhoods, some people away from certain neighborhoods. I assume you found that a lot as well.
Right. That's the most common sin, if you will, that a real estate agent can make in that they use whatever methods to, quote unquote, steer, and the term is racial steering, where they would send the minority buyer to a neighborhood that was more diverse and the white buyer to a neighborhood that was less diverse. As part of our testing, we collected over 5,700 listings. Those listings had addresses. We were able to plot those addresses in census tracts, which would give us the information about whether a minority tester was sent to a more diverse neighborhood and the white tester to a more white neighborhood. That occurred roughly a quarter of the time that we send out testers.
Keith, we have with us one of the testers that you recruited. Her name is Johnny Mae Alston. She's a retired civil servant for state government. She was paired with a white woman of similar age named Cindy Perry. Johnny Mae Alston, thanks for joining us and welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Sasha.
Johnny Mae, when you went out and spoke with the real estate agents before you later learned the results of how they had also interacted with white home buyers, did you feel you were being treated equally?
I surely did. I thought they went above and beyond.
Why did you think that? What made you feel confident in the service you were getting?
Because they were so friendly, and they were like giving me a 101 and home buying and telling me what I needed to look for as far as, you know, my paperwork and things like that. And they were very friendly, smiling. I mean, I would have never suspected a thing.
Later, you were shown, I believe, transcripts of how the realtors had dealt with your white counterpart. What did you then find differences?
Oh, yes. I was really in a state of shock just about because, you know, I never realized that she was actually getting treated differently. I thought we were the same. But once I found out, I was a little bit shocked about that, you know, and it wasn't a good feeling.
What were the differences? What was the thing that shocked you most?
That when I went to one real estate office, they told me they couldn't take me out because I didn't have my pre-qualifications. But the other tester, she didn't have pre-qualifications either. But they took her out, and it was like nothing. You know, they were like happy, and they was like enjoying, you know, talking with her and treating her to a ride in the car.
So, did you feel like you were being directed toward or away from certain neighborhoods in retrospect?
Not really. Not when I first went in there, but after I found out about her, then it came to me that, yeah, I mean, why would she send me there and not send me here where she sent Cindy to?
And how did it make you feel?
Well, you know what? I really felt bad. It makes you feel like you want to cry because you don't really think about that people aren't giving you good service. You really feel like you're really, like they really care. And that was the most painful thing, I think, that, you know, they're smiling in your face and shaking your hands and trying to make you feel comfortable, and yet they're doing a double take with someone else.
Johnny Mae Alston, she was joining us from Central Islip, New York. She was a tester for this Newsday series in which she was paired with a white home buyer and later found that that white home buyer was treated differently and better. Keith Herbert of Newsday, you later confronted some of these real estate agents. What kind of feedback did you get?
Well, the agents were all invited to come in to view the audio recordings and the video recordings we made of their individual tests. We gave them plenty of time to sit, watch, and look at the results. The most of them didn't choose to sit for an interview after viewing that. The ones that did, tried to give us explanations that that would indicate they made their decisions based upon something other than the race of the testers.
Like what? What might they base their decision on?
Well, several times they would use information that was part of the interaction that reflected on what the tester may have said about where they were currently living and where they might have to commute, where their job would be or where their spouse's job would be. Each one of the testers went in, however, and asked for the same thing, generally a commuting time of 20 or 30 minutes of a specific area.
So clearly later when you evaluated the realtor's reasoning, it didn't seem to hold up in the face of the facts.
That's correct.
That's Keith Herbert. He's an investigative reporter for Newsday, which has done a large investigation about housing discrimination against minority homebuyers on Long Island. Later this hour, we're going to hear that that is certainly not just a Long Island problem. It's a nationwide problem. Keith, stay with us. And Johnny Mae Alston, thanks to you for coming on. Johnny Mae was a tester for this series in which she went out with a white counterpart, later discovered she had been treated differently and not as well. Johnny Mae, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Let us know what you think. We'll be back after a short break. We're talking about housing discrimination and its many forms, often very subtle forms. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're talking about a big investigation by the newspaper Newsday into housing discrimination on Long Island and what that investigation revealed. Later in this hour, we're going to be looking at the national picture. It is not just a Long Island or New York problem. If you are old enough to remember the days before so-called fair housing laws were enacted, do you think it's now better or different than it used to be? Are you surprised to hear that discrimination was found by investigative testers on Long Island, or are you not surprised at all? We also want to know if you ever feel like you were discriminated against when you were trying to buy or rent based on the color of your skin or perhaps your name. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest is Keith Herbert. He's an investigative reporter for Newsday, and he was one of the lead reporters on this project. And Keith, we have so many callers that want to weigh in that I want to go to some of them right away. So let's go to Rennell calling from Hudson, Florida. Welcome to On Point, and let us know what you think as you listen to this. Is housing discrimination something you feel like you've experienced, or what's your perspective?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Actually, yes. and I'm a veteran, and it's very troubling. My wife and I went through three different real estate companies before we actually settled on one that would willingly show us what we were looking for. I wanted to buy a home on a golf course. I was pre-approved, but we were continually steered towards neighborhoods that were either close by a golf course instead of on it, or just omitted what we wanted altogether, thinking that we would just like the house if we saw it. I really didn't take into account that it might have been discrimination until the third agent, when this one just absolutely would not show us homes in a subdivision we were looking in, saying that those homes were either pending or already sold or what have you. And the fourth real estate agent actually helped us secure the home we wanted.
And was this a home in a subdivision you had been told had no homes available?
Yes, it was. And we are currently living in a home in that very same subdivision currently. And it's just troubling. I thought this might have been a one-off, but to hear this program, yes, I think something needs to be done nationally. This is a problem.
You know, Rinelle, one of the things this investigation found is that housing discrimination today is very subtle. It's not blatant like it used to be. And it sounds like in your case, you felt like it was subtle, and that can make it hard to prove that that's what it was. What are you, when you try to think through how you could say, I was discriminated against, how do you feel like you would be able to prove that? Is it very difficult?
Yes, it would be very difficult because it would seem from the outset that customer service was just excellent. I mean, they're smiling, friendly, willing to work within your budget, but not necessarily willing to place you in areas that aren't so diverse.
Thank you for calling, and I'm sorry that happened to you. We appreciate that you called. And I want to take another caller. This is Aaron calling from Detroit in Michigan, of course. Aaron, welcome to On Point. Your experience with housing discrimination, if you have experienced it.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, it was not me personally, my brother, but before I say that, I wanted to say that the most surprising thing to me is that we keep acting surprised about discrimination. It has been consistent ever since the end of the Civil War, ever since the so-called Reconstruction. Blacks have been discriminated against in every sector of our society, schooling, housing, whatever. I don't know why we keep acting surprised as if it has changed. The only thing that has changed is it's had to become more subtle because the outright and blatant discrimination that once was okay is now looked at in an embarrassing way. But my brother was a store owner. He owned two successful party stores in Detroit. He had several rental properties, two apartment buildings. He was doing very well, and he was looking for a home in the suburbs of Detroit. He wanted to move in Bloomfield or West Bloomfield, and he ran into all kinds of discrimination. The way the researchers were just saying on your program, where he was being shown stuff in areas that he wasn't interested in, he was being told these very feeble reasons why he couldn't be shown certain stuff or why he wouldn't be able to purchase certain properties in certain areas, until he finally had to go to a minority or an Arab realtor to be shown properties in the cities that he was interested in.
Was he eventually able to buy a house in a neighborhood that he wanted to be in?
Well, he settled for one in Farmington Hills, but he really wanted to be in Bloomfield or West Bloomfield or in Birmingham, and he was not able. He just got tired of fighting against the grain and finally settled for Farmington Hills.
Aaron, thank you for your call. And I want to put one of your points to Keith Herbert, our investigative reporter from Newsday. Keith, when we hear Aaron say that, why should anyone be surprised? Housing discrimination has always been there, or probably has always been there, even if not as overt. Did your investigation find out that may be true, that not much has improved since fair housing laws went in place? It just became more subtle? Or where are we on the trajectory of trying to eliminate discrimination in housing?
Well, based on the reaction that we've gotten, particularly from people of color, that your callers are right on point, so to speak, that the reaction is kind of tell us something we don't know. Everyone knows this goes on. The funny thing that they're talking about that a lot of people don't consider is that imagine what your housing search is like if the realtor that you're going to is not showing you the best properties or not showing you all the homes that your dollar can afford. Your housing search is going to be stretched out, and therefore more expensive and a lot more frustrating. So those are all very common themes.
And by the way, obviously, when people are steered towards and away from certain neighborhoods, one end result is we have neighborhoods that are more segregated. What did you find are the other negative consequences of this kind of discrimination?
It was included in our report in a story about the consequences of this, that we looked at the value of a home in a highly segregated area and compared it to what it would be. That same home would be in a more white area, basically from the appreciation from the 1990 census all the way up to 2017. That gap was about $50,000. So that those two homes would have an appreciation rate that would put more money in a homeowner's pocket if the home was in a majority white area than it would be if it was in a minority area.
So your ability to build wealth over time is minimized if you're being steered away from more well-to-do neighborhoods.
Yeah, beyond the consequences that your callers talked about and Johnny May talked about, it does have an economic pocketbook issue too.
Keith Herbert of Newsday, we have a call from a realtor I see from our call screener. I'd like to go to that caller. And this is Heather, also calling from Detroit, as Aaron was from Detroit. Heather, welcome to On Point and your perspective as a realtor.
Hello. First of all, it's totally reprehensible. Fair housing law is fair housing law. We have strict codes of ethics here. We do a lot of self-regulating. Having said that, there are unethical people, I think, in all industries, if I might be so bold. Yes, there are realtors that I choose not to work with. I just want to throw this out there. One of the things, and this is a very difficult, I'm trying to choose my words carefully. I love working in Detroit. I'm based out of the Northwest suburbs, which tends to be a wealthier area. I love working in Detroit. I love working with first-time home buyers. I love working with veterans. One of my greatest challenges as an individual in a small business is that very often, not always, but very often the programs that are associated with those demographics and the price point of those homes don't allow us to make a living. If it were up to me, I'd sell 50, $10,000 houses a week in Detroit and get people into homes. But I simply cannot afford to run my business on that.
You mean the conditions are so small because the house prices are so small relative to much of the rest of the country that you try to focus on selling more expensive homes?
Well, it's a matter of necessity, and I've gotten to a point now where I have to parcel out my business and only take on so many buyers a month in certain areas. I'm completely transparent. I don't redline. I don't steer. That's reprehensible. It's totally, completely uncalled for, and it just breaks my heart to even hear about that. But from a national standpoint, or even broken down into regions, it might be time to revisit how the commission structures work. We practice contract law with some of the largest assets people will ever own. And our licensing and procedure and process is not nearly as strict as it should be. It's not regulated. We don't have uniform codes. It's kind of ridiculous.
That's interesting. But to sort of give a hypothetical, so if you sell one $500,000 home, you'd have to sell five $100,000 homes to make the same commission. And if a minority home buyer is more likely to be able to afford the $100,000 home, it's more work for you to sell more of those to make the same commission you could on one sale of a more expensive home.
That is correct. And unfortunately, the truth, whether we want to admit it or not, is a lot of the minority home buyers that I work with are looking at $35,000 houses. So in a dual agency with a 6% commission payout, 3 goes to the buyer agent, 3 goes to the listing agent. So 3% goes to my agent and my broker, and then my broker keeps a 6% franchise fee and 30% for the overhead. And that's on top of the errors and omissions insurance I pay, the monthly dues, the state, national fees, running my business, filling up my car, paying for basically everything.
Heather, Thank you for that. We have an actual realtor who is with us. I want to bring this realtor in. This is Leslie Hammond. She's an independent broker and realtor who owns her own company in Hartford, Connecticut. She was not part of the region that Newsday did its investigation of. But we have her here to offer her perspective. Leslie Hammond, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you.
And for people who aren't aware of the demographic makeup of Hartford, I think that's important to understand because some parts are certainly more white, some are more minority. Give us a little breakdown.
Well, I believe that Connecticut is one of the more segregated states by race and class, and Hartford and some of the other cities in Connecticut are the poorest, and then Fairfield County is the wealthiest county, I think, in the nation. So we have huge problems here, and we can certainly use Keith from Newsday to come here to Connecticut.
As you
hear Keith talk about his findings, as you hear our callers, as you heard our tester who says he was so shocked, does that reflect what you see from the real estate agent side of the business?
Definitely. And I feel, just listening to the last realtor, I'm a white person, and I also have been maybe asleep before, and I'm widely awake now. And I feel that we really have to be on the forefront to fight this. This is, like, appalling what's happening in these states with housing, and realtors are on the forefront. I'm hoping to show this film, Segregated by Design, to realtors. It's this amazing film about what happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and it continues today with the redlining, with the steering. And we have a huge responsibility to make a difference here.
So, Leslie, what would be the motivation for the discrimination? Is it as simple as conscious or unconscious racism on the part of the real estate agent? Or is the real estate agent assuming there may be conscious or unconscious racism on part of the buyer? Or are there practical factors, like we heard from our last realtor, who said it's more lucrative for me to buy more expensive homes, and oftentimes white people are buying the more expensive homes?
Again, as a white person, I feel every time I bring this up to white realtors, they all say, I'm not racist. I follow fair housing laws. That's what everybody keeps saying. Okay, so stop being so defensive. We have a real problem with racism in this country. And as white people, we have a responsibility to look at ourselves and to start to overcome what's happening, because it's appalling. It's just appalling. And whether it's conscious or unconscious, I don't know, but it's definitely there. We're all racist. If we're white, we're racist. It's just the way it is in this country. And we have to face that. And as realtors, we make a huge difference. And maybe it's like we're thinking that we're protecting the makeup of a town, not my backyard. Zoning is huge in Connecticut. We have very little affordable housing in many of our 169 towns. They say, that we want the character of this town, and that's all race and class.
Listeners, we're talking about a big investigation by the newspaper Newsday onto housing discrimination in Long Island. It found that there is housing discrimination, particularly against black home buyers, also to some degree Asian and Hispanic home buyers. Certainly white home buyers got the best treatment and were steered to the best homes. Have you experienced this in person? If you're a real estate agent, how do you guard against it? How do you protect yourself from being accused of doing this? Let's go to Jim, calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Jim, welcome to On Point.
In the age of Zillow and Trulia and all these online sites that essentially list every house, even ones that, the brokers have, they list the houses. And since buyers aren't obligated to go to any particular broker, anybody can go online and look at the house and tell the agent, I want to see this house. So I don't see how this would go on in this day and age when really every house is listed online. They could see.
Leslie Hammond, you're a realtor. Can you field that question?
Well, I think the Johnny May, when she was talking, like a realtor can say, I'm not going to show you the house unless you have a pre-qual letter. Or like the gentleman from Florida talking, she could, the realtor could easily say that's under deposit. So I think it still can go on, even though it is more open. I agree with that. I think it's awesome we have the internet, and it really makes it much better because people can choose streets and neighborhoods and towns. There's a lot of statistics online, so if that's important to people, they can look all that up. But still, no, we're definitely the gatekeepers, and it still happens, believe me.
Leslie, I think it would be natural for some home buyers to want to know what's the crime data here? How good are the schools here? But depending how a real estate agent answers that question, they could end up being accused of trying to steer you toward and away certain neighborhoods. What is the correct legal way for realtors to field questions like that? And do you find that home buyers are often asking them and you have to figure out how do I respond?
Yeah, a lot of people will ask that question. They'll say it's a safe neighborhood. And I'm a city person. You know, what's safe to me might not be safe to somebody else. So I always answer it that way. And I always say to call the police. We find here that police will give out statistics if that's important to people. I always say to call the police, drive around the neighborhood. You know, I want people to choose a neighborhood that feels right to them. So I always encourage them to do that.
Keith, in about a minute we have left, did you find that real estate agents feel like they are in perilous situations sometimes when homebuyers are saying, tell me about crime stats, tell me about the racial makeup of this neighborhood?
Yes, the interviews we conducted with agents did show that they feel, number one, that they're feel like they're often asked to violate the laws, include steering and things like that. But they're also trained not to talk about neighborhoods, the makeup of neighborhoods, the makeup of the people in the neighborhoods. Often schools can be considered a proxy for race.
Keith Herbert is an investigative reporter for Newsday. Keith, please stay with us as we take a break. We'll be back. And Leslie Hammond, thank you for joining us. Leslie is an independent realtor and broker who owns her own company in Hartford. Thanks for being so open as you talked about this.
Okay. Thank you, Sasha.
And listeners, when we come back, we're going to hear from a woman who leads this kind of housing discrimination testing across the country. She'll tell us what the landscape looks like nationally. Join the conversation. What do you think is the solution? Have you experienced housing discrimination? I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're talking this hour about housing discrimination in the United States, about the many subtle ways in which it persists, even decades after we created laws to try to fix it, and the challenges in trying to correct this problem. Join the conversation. Let us know what your experience has been when trying to buy or rent a home. Did you feel that because of what your name was or the color of your skin, you were being treated differently but struggled to try to find how to prove it? Are you surprised by the finding that racism in real estate still exists? Or as one of our previous callers said, why are we surprised at all? Find us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us still this hour is Keith Herbert, one of the lead reporters on this big investigation done by Newsday newspaper in Long Island. Also joining us now is Claudia Aranda. She's director of field operations for the Urban Institute, which has done more than 8,000 paired tests. These are in which a minority tester and a white tester are paired up, sent to the same real estate agent. They later see how they were treated differently. She's done 44 markets they've done these paired tests in, sales and rentals nationwide, and she joins us from Washington. Claudia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're with us. And I want to quickly play a piece of sound. This is from a real estate agent who was featured in this Newsday investigation. He's in the community of Brentwood on Long Island. And he's telling something that surprised even me. This is a black real estate agent who was approached by a white homeowner who asked him to put his house on the market for him. The realtor's name is Roy Clark with LI Community Realty in Brentwood. And here's what happened when Roy Clark was asked that.
He just got to one point where he said, Roy, I just want you to make sure that you do not bring black people to the house. And I was stunned. First of all, being that I was black and we're not over the phone, and he's just looking straight at me. But no, I don't want any black people to come into the neighborhood. And he started to talk about the neighbors and how, you know, how they would look at it and how they would look at him in selling a home to a black family and so on. It was really so blown up in his mind that it would be such a negative thing.
Claudia Aranda of the Urban Institute, we've been talking this hour about how racism today is more subtle than it used to be. Things like making a black home buyer have a pre-qualification letter when a white buyer isn't required, or steering a white home buyer to some neighborhoods and steering black people away from those neighborhoods. But this kind of overt racism, how rare or common is that in your view?
Well, Sasha, as you've talked about overall and this methodology that was used in this Newsday investigation, paired testing, is such a powerful methodology because of the fact that it gives us this very direct comparison. The two observations, one tester compared to the other. And as these studies have been done over the decades, and HUD has been, the Department of Housing and Urban Development has been sponsoring these studies since the late 1970s. The Urban Institute has not conducted all of the studies, but we have done most of them. And over the decades, we have seen that, as you've talked about, that discrimination now is much more subtle. It's harder to detect. But certainly, as the Newsday investigation shows, there continue to be experiences that people have, agents that may make very overt comments. And one of the things that we talk about as a limitation of this very powerful methodology is the fact that we don't typically get any insight on the why something is happening. It's a very powerful tool for telling us what happens. But obviously, in having these recordings, these very specific descriptions of what happens in the course of a test, it does give some insight as to why particular agents might be motivated to take particular home seekers to particular homes or to steer them away from particular neighborhoods.
You could certainly try to find out why by going to the realtors who were taped doing things determined to be racist. But do you find that when you go to them, is it just very hard to get people to open up about why they did what they did? Are they evasive? Do they give answers that aren't credible?
So this is something that is distinct from the work that we have done because of the fact that we have done nationwide studies or studies that have been in multiple places. We have not done what Newsday did. We have not been able to make recordings because of the consent laws that are in place across the country. So that's something that certainly I know that Newsday has done, but that we cannot and don't do as part of our process, as well as the fact that in doing testing for research, you are coming up with aggregate measures, looking at differences across the country as opposed to in a particular place.
Let's go to a caller from Riverview, Florida. This is Vanetta. Thanks for calling On Point, Vanetta. And let us know, do you have some experience, do you feel, with housing discrimination?
Hi, yes. I have experience in many ways. I noticed nobody has commented about the early 70s when segregation and housing was desegregation in housing is relatively new. I remember a time when my parents bought their home from my father's employee, so there was no real estate agent except for at the closing when it took place. So when they purchased directly from his employer. We were in our home probably 2 weeks, and there was a cross burned in our front yard. We were the only African-American family in the entire subdivision.
And where was this? Where was this?
This was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Within 3 years, more than half of our block had moved out and subsequently been replaced with African Americans.
So the white homeowners left as black homeowners began to come in.
Yes.
And you were aware of that happening, how did you feel?
I wasn't really conscious of what was going on until I became older because I was a child. I was about 10 years old, and I didn't know what the burning of a cross was. My parents had us hide in the closet. My father was at work, the previous owner actually came, and I remember him speaking with the neighbors and them telling him that we needed to get out the neighborhood if we didn't want problems. And my father had purchased this home, so there was no getting out of the neighborhood, and we still own that home to this day.
Bonette, I'm glad you still have that house. Those are terrible stories to hear, and thank you for telling us about that. We have so many callers that want to share similar stories that let me go to one calling from Jefferson, Maine. This is Abby. Abby, welcome to On Point, your experience with housing discrimination.
Hello, yes. I do currently live in Jefferson, Maine, but I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I am white, and my parents are as well. And my parents actually bought their home during a great white flight in a thriving, diverse neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. One thing that recently set off a red flag to me was a coworker of mine who lives in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, said that he was receiving calls from a real estate agent saying, hey, your neighbor is selling their house. You might want to consider selling your house as well because you don't know which direction the market might go in, which is something that I remember. My father is an urban planner. Both my parents are very active social justice advocates. And one of the things that I remember, especially about major great white flight periods in different neighborhoods in Chicago, was real estate scares, where they would go door to door, or they would make calls, providing this exact same message. You don't know who's moving in next door. You might consider selling your house.
And Abby, how recent is this? Did this happen to your family?
I'm talking about my family moved into their house in the late 70s. My friend who was receiving these calls was in the last month or two. I was actually with him when he received one of the calls.
Really?
And like I said, he's in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
So absolutely,
and just because of my own.
Absolutely current. That's something to hear. That's Abby calling from Maine, but having grown up in Chicago. Let's also go to a caller from Des Moines, Iowa. This is Joe. Joe, welcome to On Point. Let us know your experiences with housing discrimination, if any, of any kind.
Yes. Well, I'm a realtor and also a Latino, and I've been a realtor for the last 20 years. My biggest concern is that for those of us who are realtors, there's 2 million of us across the country, but the lack of education and training on the history of racism and how that has impacted minorities in housing is very important. We do not get that type of training, especially on the training that is required every 3 years for renewal. If we had that type of training, if that was required by the National Association of Realtors and also the state associations, then it would be less likely for local realtors to commit these terrible atrocities when it comes to redlining, moving minorities into areas where they shouldn't have to be. It also impacts the type of financing that minorities have to deal with, forcing minorities into contract purchases versus mortgages. But this also then flows into the lending practices, too. And lenders, in my opinion, have been less willing to work with minorities on providing the different types of things that they need to have to improve their ability to buy
Joe,
at a higher price.
Thank you for that. So, and you bring up a very important point, which is the training of realtors, which the Newsday investigation looked into. And we have a piece of sound from a documentary that accompanied the Newsday project, which again can be found at onpointradio.org. We have a link to that Newsday article. And in this piece of the documentary, a real estate instructor explains to a room of agents who are getting anti-discrimination training. Actually, it's a bit hard to understand exactly what his message is supposed to be, which is why we have picked this piece of sound. It does sound like there's some nudge, nudge, wink, wink going on, though. So here is that excerpt.
I'm trying to share with you how not to get caught. And the way not to get caught is not to violate the law. And the way not to violate the law is to know what the law is. Then if you do get caught, then it's your choice. I'm telling you, the speed limit out here is 55 miles an hour. If you choose to do 65 miles an hour, that's your choice.
Keith Herbert of Newsday, you were one of the lead reporters on this project. As you listen to that taped real estate training, what do you make of what message that trainer is trying to send?
Well, I'm not real clear on what he's trying to send as far as a message. He did sit down and interview with us and indicated that in light of what was found in his class, he may alter his methods for teaching fair housing standards. But I want to make one point. There is a hue and cry for more training, and what your caller, the real estate agent, mentioned is ongoing here in New York. They're looking at their training. They're trying to beef it up. They're going to fair housing experts to perhaps help them with the training. But one of the key things that we found in the investigation that some of the agents seem to know the law. They know where their line is. They seemed, based upon our evidence, to be willing to cross that line on behalf of a white buyer, but not on behalf of a minority buyer. So it seems that there's some daylight between the training that goes on and what seems to be not enough of enforcement of existing law, primarily through testing. There needs to be sort of the adult in the room when it comes to the marketplace.
Claudia Aranda of the Urban Institute, you've looked at housing discrimination nationally. And one of the – there's a quote, a really striking quote in the Newsday investigation in which someone says, you would never expect this in New York. This is something that didn't happen in the Deep South. It happened in one of the most educated, most liberal regions of the country. Do you find that this is fairly well – a well-distributed problem across the country? Are there certain geographic areas that have it worse than others?
Well, even though the last study that we did in the sales market that was looking at the impact of race and ethnicity, so we looked at discrimination against African-Americans, Latinos, and Asians, even though we found an overall decrease in discrimination from the previous decade, we continue to see this across the country. And so this is something that, and Keith's point is really an important one, making that linkage between the training of real estate agents, but also the training of residents, of home seekers, so that they have an understanding, regardless of where you live in the United States, regardless of where you're looking for a home, that you understand what laws are designed to protect you and to protect the choices that you have when you're looking for a home. And so I think the point about how important it is to continue to enforce the laws that are on the books, because as we've seen over the decades, since this methodology was used by enforcement organizations, by civil rights organizations, in the 60s, in the 70s, that the education has come often in response to enforcement, in response to something that has come to light, a practice that has come to light because of what testing has been able to do, of the specific evidence of discrimination that testing has provided. And so I think that linkage is a very important one, and that by increasing the education, the training of both residents and agents, that will encourage residents to come forward, to go to a fair housing organization whenever they suspect that something may have happened, but that also allows fair housing organizations to do the type of testing that the Newsday investigation did, which, as the Newsday team knows, as the testers that participated know, it is a very specific and detailed methodology to use. It is expensive. And so enforcement organizations, for housing organizations across the country, need to continue to have the capacity to do this work. And as we've seen over these decades, housing providers continue to evolve their practices. They continue to change. And so it's important for organizations, for residents, to continue to know how it's changing so that they can also change their behavior.
Claudia, thanks for that. And Keith, as Claudia just alluded to, and as you acknowledged in your piece, this is very good testing that clearly can show discrimination, but also time-consuming, expensive. You spent 3 years on this. I wish we had more time to talk about your thoughts of how likely we are to see improvement on this front. Keith Herbert of Newsday, thank you very much for staying with us this whole hour. And Claudia Aranda of the Urban Institute, thank you to you two very much. And listeners, you continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us, and I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.
Mm-hmm. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.